What we should continue with today is the more formally specified idea of what a conflict in a canonical automaton actually is. And it turns out that there are two kinds of conflicts that can happen. At first, there's the situation where we have a state in the canonical automaton where we have two different completed items. These ones here, and they are obviously different in some way. And in this case, we simply can't say with which of the productions to perform the reduction. So that's the first kind of.
So the conflict is when there are two complete reductions in the same state? Or
in the same state, exactly. If they are in two different states, well, you will have the automaton end up in one specific state, so that doesn't matter. But if they're in the same state, they cause problems because you can't say which. Well, it gives non-unique help for our shift-reduced parser. Yeah. The other situation, which we might end up with, is the shift-reduced conflict. The shift-reduced conflict consists in one of the items being a complete one and another item also residing in the same state, which is not complete yet and has the marker in front of a terminal symbol. The non-terminals are not consuming any input, so that doesn't matter at that point, but the terminals are the bad ones. So in these cases, we call such states now just unsuited for the method that we have chosen so far. So what we have looked at right now are LR0 unsuited states. That means that they have some kind of conflict. Okay. So let's have a look, a little bit of a closer look onto what the causes for such a conflict actually are. So in a successful parsing attempt, we get the derivation tree that we have here. And as we have seen in our example, there are places where there's still conflicts possible. For example, there's the spot here where we have already processed a little bit of the input and come up with the pushdown content of the start state and T so far. And now there would be, in principle, different things that we want to do with such a T. If we only consider the sequence that from the top here, that is what the LR0 automaton does, we end up with a situation where it gives us two options. There's a completed item for reducing the T to E, and there's also a non-completed item which says shift the times symbol, the star. And yeah, the question is now, how can we determine which of the actions are actually possible? There is situations where we actually want to do the shift action, so we would go over this way to come up with a zeroth variant for T. Or if you look at this specific point, we also have a T on the stack. It doesn't differ in any case on the pushdown. However, in this case, we would not want to shift another item and try to steer towards a reduction with a T variant. But instead, for a successful parse of this thing, we would have to choose the direct reduction with E. So one could wonder what the actual differences. And, well, you might have already spotted a certain thing over here. I have a zero as a parameter for my concept here. The idea would be, once again, to like we had in the LL approach, to consider the input, or at least a certain fixed amount of the input, a certain certain look-ahead window. Because if you have a look at the situations that we had before, each time we have a situation where we have T on the push down. But if you look closely onto the input, you will see that in the first case we had the symbol star on there. And when we look into our grammar, we see that there's only one occurrence of the star, which is directly after the T. So, in order to come up with some the parse process that actually completes successfully on a derivable input, then the idea would be, if you see such a star, it is a strong hint that we have a situation in the input that is related to this spot in the grammar. Let's have a look at the other situation. This was the one where we had to perform a direct reduction to E. In this case, we have a different looking input. In this case, we have the plus symbol in there. Now we might wonder where does the plus actually occur? And it turns out that there's no direct plus anywhere in the grammar that is directly to the right of T somehow. So a direct shift is probably not what we want to do when we have a plus in the input. Instead, when we look closer, we see that we have, for example, a T, which is the last symbol in the right-hand side of the non-terminal E in this case. And for E, we have an occurrence of plus on the right-hand side of an E. So from a strategic point of view, it would be, if you see a plus, then it would be a good idea to somehow try to create an E out of my stack content. In this case, we have the possibility with T with E going to T, we can reduce the T to E. So in this case, the structure of the grammar would kind of favor to perform a reduction of the T to E in case that we find that plus is the next symbol in the input. Well, this is a kind of an informal approach. We can do that in a more structured way a little bit later on. But first of all, let's try to have a closer look on how grammars actually have to look in order to be able to be processed with a certain fixed amount of look ahead. Well, there's a condition for that, which is once again kind of demand driven, because there is this idea of having a certain fixed amount of look ahead into the input. So for situations where we have successful derivation, meaning we come from our root node S and do rightmost derivations. So we do these rightmost derivations. We will reach certain configurations where we have where we have to identify handles in the input. Handles is this right-hand side sides of productions with which we want to perform reductions. So we have to be able to identify these bettas, which are exactly these handles. And LRK grammars are grammars for which it is sufficient to have a look ahead of size k. So what we want to check is for the first k symbols in this w or this x. So the first k symbols of the things that come behind these handles. We cannot distinguish two situations based on just this fixed look-ahead window, then in LRK grammars, it turns out that the complete left part of these stack contents, which is exactly these configurations or these sentence forms that can be produced from such an S, turn out to have to be the same. So what it says is, if we find a handle and see the same look ahead in both situations, then we can be sure that it is non-ambiguous situation, that in every case we will end up to have to use the same production for reduction, and the rest of this pushdown will also be the same. So the complete left context of this will be the same. So LRK grammars are grammars for which you can decide non-ambiguously with just a fixed look ahead of K which production to choose for reduction. So we can now try to check this property for grammars now, whether they are suitable for LRK parsing or not. And the idea is that we want to focus on all the possible rightmost derivations that are possible with this kind of grammar. So we're interested in such a sequence of rightmost derivations. And the idea is to identify in these sentence forms that can be produced with such a grammar to try to identify the handles, the right-hand sides of these productions with which to reduce, and try to see whether or try to determine the a fixed k such that looking only at the first k symbols of this w, which is the rest of the input, that this will be unambiguous, this choice. So let's do that in examples. So we have LRK grammars, or possible candidates for LRK grammars, which we have to check. First one is S goes to A or B. Then there for A we have A, A, B, and 0. And for B we have A, B, two small b's, and 1. And now, what can we do with that grammar? First of all, just for curiosity's sake, are these grammars that we can, or is this a grammar that we can parse with an LLK parser? So is this is there a K such that this grammar is an LLK grammar? This shaking heads, does it mean don't know, or does it mean no, it's not an LLK grammar? Well, unluckily, what you see here is not a direct instance of this left recursion, something like that. But nevertheless, you can find quite a similar argument for the structure here, where we have only one fixed terminal and then once again the left hand side symbol. So this is also some kind of recursion, and in this case we can also find some blow ups such that we can't have a fixed window for the input. So what we see here is a grammar which is not fixed, which is not LLK for any possible K. But anyway, let's consider right-hand side derivations for a bit. What are possible right-hand side derivations with these productions? Let's just start with a single step. So with S, when we do rightmost derivation, we have to replace S with something. So we end up with, for example, we have only these two choices. So we end up with, for example, A. Or we might also end up with B. Anyway, this so will end up to be the same. So this is one of the possible derivations. So let's try to identify a handle in this. Well, if we have to assume that these derivations you have to match this structure over here, where beta is a right-hand side of a production, well, then it's the beta is pretty much fixed. So large A is one of these betas, or for the other case, we have large B. So there's no other, or at least those two do not interfere in any way. So let's continue to perform rightmost derivations. For example, for A, what can we get for A? For A, we have to do rightmost derivations. Rightmost is irrelevant because there's only one occurrence of a non-terminal, so this will probably go to AB, or zero. So let's try to match it with the structure that we have marked here. Let's find a beta in this one. Well, once again, that's this whole thing. And here, in this case, also zero is a whole right-hand side. These are all beta matches. So, however, we're not done yet. We haven't touched the B in any case right now. But anyway, let's continue. We might recursively replace this A in these right derivations. So this might end up with AA, ABB, or even AAA, ABBB, or more generally speaking, we might end up with AN, AAB, BN. So these are all the things that we can have as rightmost derivations just from the A. And at some place we will probably have the zero in there. So, yeah. We'll have... This will also be a possible thing. So, if we have to... would you be so kind and close the door? I think that's beneficial for concentration here. Thank you. Okay, so once again, we have to match with our structure alpha beta W. And in these cases, well, what we can match with is the structure that we have small a, large a, b with beta. The other a to the n will match the a, and the b to the n will match the omega. Okay, this case pretty much similar. And in this we see that the all those are just special cases of the one that we have over there. Also, if A is same, if N is same as zero, then we also have this one as a special case. So we can remove all that, all of those. This zero alone is also a special case of this one down there. So that is that. Yeah, then there remains still the derivations that we can do from B, which will be, well, A, B, B, B. And as we can do the same recursive scheme as we have done before, we can just put A, N over here, and here B to the 2N. And get the same thing for not the zero, but the one as a terminator. In these cases, we can match our handle with, well, in this case it's just one. And in this case over here, well, we still have to pull out the 1A and 2Bs. So I should have left a little bit of space. So these should have been pulled out. So now that we have all the possible rightmost derivations for our grammar, we can now try to find a minimal k such that we can decide by just looking on that minimal look-ahead window into the W part whether all these matchings are actually unique. I think I've prepared that already, and I've taken away in this case, a little bit of the W amount here, because, well, I tried to start with this example by just checking a look-ahead window of zero. And it turns out that for that, we get this situation here, where we have no no W taking part in the matching at all. So the idea is now whether we can uniquely match with the structure over there, and we see that there is actually no overlapping in any of these beta parts. So there's no confusion going on, especially between those two, which have the same left context. There is actually difference in the beta itself. Over here, which also has the same left context, there's also a direct difference to the others, same as here. So these all are distinguishable, and also A and B, which are for the special cases where the N is zero, are also different to the rest. So there, we don't even have to touch the W in order to decide for our handles. So these are ones that we can, these are productions, or this is a grammar, which we can parse without any look ahead. So this is LR0. For this example here, I did it quite extensively by showing you how to come up with these rightmost derivations. For the next ones, to speed the process up a little bit, I have pre-processed these things. But you see, the idea would be that you would try to come up with all the different rightmost derivations and try to sum them up in a detailed way, like I did with these A to the N, B to the 2N, and so forth, and to collect all of them and then try to identify the handles in there. And this is a job which is a little bit tricky in the beginning, but you'll get a little bit of training on the tutorial sheets. What you can assume is that these W parts are always non-terminal free. So this is the first thing for you to guide you on your matching, and the so all you have to find is this beta thing, which now may contain these non-terminal things. So you can get a rough idea where to match them already. Apart from that, the beta must be the last match before going over into the this plain terminal part, so to say. So that is where you have to find a match. And when you are able to locate two things that are suitable as handles which overlap in their prefix, then you have found a conflict in this case. So we'll see conflicts after in a few later examples. So we have another example for a grammar here, which is S goes to A large AC, or A goes to ABB or B. In this case, the characteristics for this grammar not being LLK is a little bit more obvious here, because we have the direct recursion in this production here. So for this one, we directly know that this is, won't be LLK for any K. But now let's focus on the different rightmost derivations. And once again, I have pre-done that for you already. So what possible rightmost derivations are is here. Once again, I try to do this kind of iterative scheme where I first try to find these matchings with a look ahead of zero. And I come up with these combinations. And for this one, also there's no overlap whatsoever between the found matchings. So once again, we can say that this is LR0. So that's not so exciting. Let's have an example where we actually see where LR0 has problems. So this is the example three. For here, we can once again try to construct these rightmost derivations. And it turns out that for these ones, we run into problems if we don't look at the W. What is the critical spot here? Well, imagine that for the first of these derivations, the ones, or what you see here is a complete derivation, so there's nothing cut away on the right-hand side. However, you must decide on whether to match with B or with BBA, like the right-hand side from over here. So we have either this one or this one. The problem is now that those are overlapping. You have to match with B here and here. And these two are now possibly conflicting with each other in the choice of such a right-hand side with which to reduce. So without looking at the fraction that comes here, it's not clear whether you have to match with a particular single B, because it may be that later on in your input you will have an A, and in this case, or a large A, if you have whether when you have a C, everything's fine. Then you have, by chance, found the actual spot, the only spot in the whole input where I have to match with the single B. But you don't know. It may be that in the input there are still other Bs. And in this case, a premature reduction with the second variant would then close your opportunity for reading in further Bs at all, and will just expect that the next symbol would be a C, which is the only symbol that can come after such a production chain. You have to keep in mind that with this you can kind of produce this BBA, which can then also be BBA, also BBA, but in as soon as you reduce with this B, you're done with the whole part here, and the only thing that can follow there is then the C. So this is a critical spot if you don't look further into your input. But as soon as you add another symbol from the input matching candidates, you will end up with the situations that you see sketched here, where we have now this C, which is now a look ahead into the input. And as soon as we see this C in the input, we will know that we will have reached the right border of my Bs in my input, and in this case I will have to choose B. More formally, what you would see is that there's an overlap of these two handles, but by looking at the look ahead and the continuation of this handle here, which is a B, you can actually differentiate these two spots with each other. Okay. So the only other situation that you can have as rightmost derivation is the one you see over here, but that's not overlapping with the others. That's non-critical. Okay, so in this case we will decide for LR0. No, not for LR0, but for LR1. Yes, please.
Actually, I cannot see the difference between for all of
That's a good question, but it's simply answered. You cannot see because we only have a single occurrence of non-terminals on the right-hand side. So we're doing rightmost reductions or leftmost reductions is not... You cannot directly see that by performing the reductions themselves. The only thing... The only thing how to generate a difference would be to have multiple occurrences of non-terminals. So in the examples that we see here, we only have one non-terminal occurring in the derivations at most because we don't have any multiplication of non-terminals by some production. I think also the other ones were in the same manner. Yes, yeah. There's also no... no other occurrences. So the problem is that as soon as you start these grammars with multiple occurrences of non-terminals on the right-hand sides, the examples tend to be much larger, and they for sure wouldn't fit so well on these slides. I'm also not so sure whether they are really suitable for any exercises or something like that. See, the next example is also one that has no occurrence of several non-terminals. So, yeah. Yep. Oh, wrong one. So for this one, we have rightmost derivations which look quite regular. So these turn out to be like this. And for those, I also would have to decide where to perform my reduction. I have to find a handle, such a beta. Yeah. And this the beta to choose from here would probably be one of these Bs, because that is the only thing that matches a right-hand side. The question is now, where can I safely assume that I have to reduce with beta, with B in this case? Well, the problem is that as soon as I start my sequence of Bs in the input, I can with a production like this one, I can kind of blow up the number of Bs that follow the spot where I would probably later on have to use another one of these Bs to come up with such an with the A in order to continue with the other variant. So in these cases, the location for the B is if you take a fixed amount of look ahead, you will be always be able to construct an input for which the amount of Bs exceeds any look ahead. So in this case, I cannot find any I cannot fix any N up front before starting to parse. That is able to cope with all the inputs for this grammar. So there is a grammar which is not LRK for any of the for any fixed K. Let's consider you have to for any fixed K to work, you would have to for any example of these inputs, which is arbitrary, but fixed many B's, then a B, and another arbitrary many B's of the same same number. You would have to, at some point, to cut in there and decide that this is the suitable spot to do the reduction. And well, you cannot actually decide that with our methods. Okay. Anyway, this is a quite bothersome way to perform these LRK tests. Later on, we will see that we can come up with whether a grammar is LRK or not by just performing the construction of the LRK canonical automaton, which is once again a quite mechanical way, quite comparable to the construction of the LR0 automaton. And this is exactly doing the same thing as here. This will locate possible conflict scenarios directly from the grammar without this type of construction. So yeah, you could automate this test. Okay. So back to the topic. If you remember, well, there was a lot of talk about LRK grammars. But the basic idea on what we wanted to exploit for making our decisions more deterministic in the LR0 automaton was to incorporate the idea of a look ahead into our advice giving canonical automaton, thus creating an LR1 or even an LRK automaton out of the LR0 automaton. So, in order to do so, you remember we had for the LR0 automaton the idea to have for states sets of items. In order to now incorporate information about the right context or the possible the suitable look ahead for for an item to be admissible at a certain configuration, then we have to integrate it somehow into this concept of sets of items, and for that we will just extend our LR0 items, which were these just items, to LR1 items or LRK items by adding look-ahead symbols, or for even larger LRK automata, I would have to add sequences of look-ahead symbols to each of these items. So an LR1 item is now a pair consisting of an item and also a character sequence of length 1, so a single character. Also, what we will be definitely sure is that the symbol will be somehow related to the item in a certain way. It will be related to the context in which in which my computation state is actually in. And this will be related to the locations in other productions where my left-hand side of the item actually occurs. So the symbol here will be a symbol that is from the follow set of the left-hand side of my production. Okay, that's given you the idea of what the follow set actually is. The follow set of B is actually in all occurrences of B in right most derivations, it will be the first set of all the things that appear to the right of the of this B within such a derivation. Okay, so if we look what that actually means is that our new characteristic automaton will be there not just to produce admissible items, but to yield admissible LR1 items. When is an LR1 item admissible? This is admissible if the automaton runs on pushdown content, which is this gamma alpha, and the item B goes to alpha dot beta and x. This is admissible for this pushdown content gamma alpha. If gamma is of a structure such that it can it is produced by a rightmost derivation from the root symbol, so it is kind of composed from several derivations that are that are occurring in the sequence of derivations that starts from S and at some place reaches B. So that's why the situation where B is admissible. Yeah, and admissible means even more. It means that if you have a closer look at what the item is actually made up of, made up from, it means that it is legal to continue with alpha and beta here. And then the look ahead comes into play. This x must be the first thing that is producible from or derivable from the right context of the same derivation. So this is what this derivation comes as W. So this is the whole thing over here. And the first symbol must be X, which is the thing that is over here. So this is a quite complicated structure that you have here. But in fact, this X is just extracting or extending the context in which the B appears a little bit. With LR0 items, you had all the this part here to decide which productions actually we are actually looking at when we are in this. In this configuration of the shift reduce parser, in the LR1 parser, we will also incorporate the first symbol of the input into what we take into account in order to decide what the valid production at this configuration actually is. So it's just taking another source of information into account. How can we come up with an automaton that does that? This is the characteristic LR1 automaton. And we can actually use a construction which is quite similar to the one that we had for the LR0 automaton. But we now use, instead of LR0 items, we use LR1 items. For a start, we will start with this special the special item, which is with the, our artificial S prime left hand side, and it goes to our root non-terminal, which is this S here. And for our start state, we will consider that the start state is something that has to derive our complete input. So there won't be any right context whatsoever which is valid for a successful parse. So in this case, our admissible right context will just be not there. There won't be any right context possible, so we can put the empty string in there. Good. Final states are ones that we will have a closer look on later. So for transitions, what are valid transitions in our LR1 automaton? Well, same as it has been for LR0 automaton. When we have our bullet as a marker in front of any symbol, we will consume the symbol and shift the marker one to the right after the symbol. For the context, there won't be anything different in this case because there's no change in the production that we're looking at. We're still looking at the same production, so the right context of the whole subtree is something that does not change. So we will just carry over the context symbol that we have tracked so far. Okay. Now there's the only spot where something really changes. The other type of transition, which is not the shift transition, but expansion transition here, was the one where we had the marker in front of a non-terminal. And for this one, we created a connection to a new fresh item with a marker on the left, because we might have to still account for the fact that there might be the B not completely processed so far on the stack, so we have to consider that B still has to be processed. So that's why when the marker is in front of a non-terminal, we add a fresh item as new state. This is an empty labeled transition because, there isn't anything consumed there. We just go more into detail for the non-terminal where we have the bullet marker in front of. But now there's something different compared to before. Because we are now changing the focus of what production we are looking at. We started with the production A goes to alpha B beta, and now we're focusing on another production B goes to gamma. And in this case, the old context, which was the context of where A can actually occur, is something which is not relevant anymore for our now newly focused item, because this is only dependent on, not completely, but this now depends on the context where this B is actually coming from. And the place that E is actually coming from is this... Oh. Is this this item over here where we have beta as the right context of B. So as admissible context for this item, I have to track what can come first within this beta. So that's what I do with my X prime. I will I will take the first symbol that is derivable from beta as my right context of this new production. Well, there's still one side remark here. Beta could, of course, be empty or could produce empty at some point. So if there's empty inside, I will also have to consider that, then beta is finished, I still might be dependent on the context where my former production was having its context, so I would still have to concatenate with the former look ahead, which is this X, but this comes only into play if the first symbol of beta is at some place epsilon or non-existent, then I will have to take the right context of my former item. So, actually, there's also the one concatenation applied here. So, that's missing here. Okay. So this was a lot of complicated explanations. It turns out that if you perform this construction, it is something which you can once again do quite in a quite automated way, which is always nice because you only have to concentrate on the particular steps that you're implementing at the moment and don't have to do the whole construction yourself. However, in order to grasp what this is actually about, we should probably perform one of these constructions together. What I didn't do now, well, I was introducing the characteristical LR1 automaton on the last slide. Now, of course, you can do the same steps as you could do with the characteristic LR0 automaton and perform this automaton construction and then do the transformation into a deterministic automaton with your power set construction, or you can do that in a direct way. By introducing once again a closure operator, and this closure operator would work quite similar to the one that you had before for the LR0 automaton, in that it would add a whole lot of new fresh items to your item state from which you are coming from, in case that the left-hand side of this fresh item is somehow reachable via derivations from any of the symbols that carries the marker on the left-hand side. However, there's still an addition, because we are now also dealing with right contexts. So for these fresh items, we also have to carry context symbols, and these context symbols we get from the construction over here. Once again, I missed the one concatenation over here, and this is denoting the same thing that we have had in the characteristic automaton, just a little bit more compressed. So what we have to do here is we have to consider the right context of each of these occurrences of the left-hand side of my fresh item. And in case that this one is empty, I have to consider also the all the intermediate steps as well as the original right context and the look ahead. It was valid for my original thing. So these are all things that go into my my new look ahead symbol. So I have to perform a little bit of first computation and one concatenation, and with that I can compute this one. In practice, this especially when we are looking at LR1 automata, this will be a quite simple operation because it just will consist in is my right context empty. If so, I will have to carry on with my with the context from the production that I was coming from. But we will see that in the example later on. To the characteristic. What is with beta?
It's a terminal symbol?
The beta? No, it doesn't necessarily have to be. It comes from the here from the production, and that is a sequence of terminals or non-terminals. So. But I think in the LLK description, we had a short section how to compute or perform this first one function for sequences of terminals and non-terminals. And, that is the same principle as we had for the canonical LR0 automaton. It's just a direct computation of the state of the LR1 automaton with just the closure operator. And it starts like the characteristic automaton from this always the same item. But now, same as for LR0, we will, every time we open up a new state, we will automatically just perform the epsilon closure on that, which will compute all these steps where it evaluates whether the marker is in front of some non-terminal and carries over all the look-ahead symbols for the other one items. Okay. The final states are, once again, ones where we have the marker on the right-hand side. Yeah, and transitions are just the same way as they were in the characteristic LR1 automaton, with the look-ahead carried over and the closure function applied to the whole state afterwards. So if you compare that to the construction, how we did it for the LR0 automaton, it's pretty much the same, especially for the transitions. The only place where actually a difference kicks in is when you perform the computation for the epsilon closure. So let's focus on how this actually is makes a difference. So we have, once again, the grammar that we always have as examples in the last slides. And let's try to perform this construction. Is it readable from the last row? Well, I hope to read off as I write. So, but if you don't get it, please make a sign or a call out or something. So we can start from the portion that we have already computed for the LR0 automaton, for the canonical LR0 automaton last time. So let's try to just add the portion that's relevant for the LR1 automaton, which is the look-ahead symbol. Yeah. It's not always the case that the automata that come out of that construction are actually structurally similar to each other, meaning that they would have the same amount of states or the same transitions from one to each other. Well, that's probably obvious because the LR1 automaton should be in somehow able to detect differences, considering what the LR0 automaton could detect. But anyway, in our case, we can start off from the same first few states anyway. So let's start. At first, we will, well, the E is our root symbol. And the first thing to start with is always the same, which is this artificial S prime goes to our root symbol, which is E. We have the dot in front of that, which is fine. What is the initial context for the very first item? Yeah, it's the root node. So there is no right context, so we can start with epsilon for the first context. So epsilon is the context for the first item. Now, in order to carry out this this epsilon closure, we have to compute the other items for the first state. So the marker was in front of E, so we will generate E goes to E plus T and E goes to T, always with the marker on the left-hand side. However, we also have to decide on the left context of these new items. So what would be the left context for these two new items? You can determine that by looking at the production from which you came, or from the item from which you came. So where we came from was the initial one, where we had the marker in front of E. So we have to look at what is the right context of E. what is the sequence of characters, the sequence of symbols that comes after E? Well, in our case, there's nothing coming afterwards. It's just empty. So there's no source for any other look-ahead symbol. So I have to look in the look-ahead fraction of my LR1 item for right context of these new LR1 items. And what do I find there? Well, it is the epsilon. So epsilon is the first thing that I have to carry over to these. Epsilon. Okay. Am I done yet? Well, I have to for the newly added items, I have to check whether they spawn new fresh items. So, let's do that. For example, this E goes to T. Well, it has the marker in front of T, so it will spawn new T item, fresh T items. So this will be T goes to T times F and T goes to F. Once again, for that's fine. That's all that we can do with T, but we still have to keep track of the look ahead. What is the look ahead for these things? Well, I have to look at the part right to the symbol that is marked, and which is epsilon. So I will have epsilon in there and epsilon in there. And yeah, am I done yet? No, I have to once again check for fresh items to spawn. And there's the fresh item for F because the marker is in front of F, and there's the same look ahead, so that's fine so far. So I have epsilon everywhere. So was there any point in having them different or having them kept apart from each other? Well, there actually is, because that is just the naive way of doing this carrying over. There is still work to do, because I was very quick in going over a few of these look-ahead computations, especially. Let's probably just keep in mind that we have created epsilon as look-ahead symbol for each of them already. I will take them away, although they are correct, just to make a little bit more room for other markers and all that here. So epsilon will be valid for everything. Have a look back at this production here. We have the marker in front of the E, so we have spawned in, we should have spawned in fresh E items. However, we have that already, so we didn't bother to create new ones. Although, for this one, we had a new situation. The E was actually followed by some new symbols. So there was a right context for the E. We didn't actually bother to check, because we weren't used to rechecking items that we already added beforehand to our collection of items, because for LR0 this was not necessary. Now we see for LR1 we also have to consider items that we have already added to the whole thing, because their right context may have changed, because we might have uncovered new occurrences of non-terminals which now have different context than before. So in these cases, as E can occur with plus as its right context, I have to add the plus symbol to the right context collection for all of the E related items. So plus will go into this as well as epsilon. Epsilon was from before. But now we see that this tea was something where we also had just carried over the look ahead from the production over here. But now the right context of the whole the look ahead of this item has changed. It has grown by a plus. So we will also have to carry that over into the productions from T, and as there's also a connection to F, we also have to put them over to F. So this propagates over the whole system. If you don't pay attention, you have to reevaluate all the things once again. So the you have to iterate several times until the whole system stabilizes. It turns out that there's once there's one additional. Is it really? I don't know whether I can probably enlarge it some way. Let's do the probably by hand somehow. No. I think this looks better. Is it better from the last row? Probably. So there's you see that the first look ahead symbol was just the epsilon, and here for E, as E appears also with a plus on the right, for all the E productions we also add the plus symbol to the look ahead. This is carried over to the T look ahead because T appears here without any right context by its own, so it just copies over the epsilon plus part. And now we see that T also appears here and has its own star as a right context. So starting from T, we will also add the star as a look ahead symbol. This is also carried over here. And yeah, as F is something that carries over the whole look ahead set from the T production, it will also end up as being the look ahead sets for this one. Yes, please. That is actually a valid question, and thankful that you asked for that. In principle, you would also have to add that if the E there would be a marked E. The E is not highlighted with a bullet. So that's not a valid point where I spawn in new, fresh items. So that's why I don't care about the right context of the E. But there is other states where the right bracket will actually be a valid right context and will be added to look ahead sets, but just not here. Mm-hmm. So two components are important, which are the non-terminals that are actually marked with my bullet, and what is the right context of these things. And if there's no right context, carry over the context from the originating item.
Why do we need to carry over? I mean, like the transition of in the item T, left hand mark F. Why do we need?
Let me try to find the one. Is it?
Yeah, this one.
This one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would, in principle, I would have to split up these items into several ones, because there's a situation where we come from here and from here. but I just merged them into a set of look-ahead symbols. So depending on which way I come from, I have different write contexts, but I can either keep a set of LR1 items with just one look-ahead symbol, or just one item with this. So that's just because I'm lazy and I want to save space. Okay. Good. So, how does it continue when I perform my other transitions with shift? Well, that's what we see over there. We have our start state Q0, from which I can do a transition with E. In these cases, the valid transitions are the ones that shift the marker to the one to the right. So almost all of these where the marker is not in front of an E are not relevant for the outcoming state, but just the ones from above. And my construction rule says, well, just copy the look-ahead symbols. So I will just use epsilon over here. And for this one, I will have epsilon and plus. In this case, you see that I have already prepared all the others. Yes?
Why is the plus in the look ahead since we have the marker just in front of it for the Q1 state, second item?
So you mean this item?
Exactly.
So just a question once again, because I was busy.
We have the marker just for the plus.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we have the plus in the look ahead?
This is carried over from here. Good. Yes. And also, the look ahead here is not directly related to the position of this point here. It's more or less related to where the point was where we spawned this fresh item, and that was one state before, and there was a context with plus. So that's why the whole constellation is. What it sort of means is that this state can be somehow relevant in a situation where either after completing this item, we completely stop. That's where the empty look-ahead comes into play, or we continue with another addition. So these are the situation where this is relevant, and that's kind of the meaning of this look-ahead. But that's probably a little bit it needs time to see that. Anyway, that's the basic idea of the whole thing. When we do transitions with our transition function, we just copy over or carry over the look ahead, because we are not manipulating anything, at least at the first in the first place. But it might be necessary as soon as our marker hits another non-terminal, might be necessary to spawn new fresh items, and for that we might have to do new computations of look-aheads. So the situation for that, is there some situation? I think here for this Q5 there was a situation where we have moved the marker one to the right and have reached another E, and that is now the situation where your closing bracket is important, because now I probably have to at first copy the right context of the Q0 LR1 item, which was the origin for this transition. And I think it was epsilon
plus and times.
So that is the right context of this item. And now we would have to once again spawn new fresh items because our marker is in front of E. So in this case, we would have to carry over the right context, which is the closing bracket for both of the E productions. And take care, because our marker is once again in front of an E, but with another right context. So I have to add a plus over here. Then I have T. For T, I can copy the bracket and plus, bracket and plus. And take care, because T is in front of times. So I have to add star. And so on. So I do the same construction that I have done before, and I try to repeat that until the whole system stabilizes. Is that signable? Okay. Yeah. So it should end up with. Yeah. And you see, this is also a way how this apps or certain symbols that have been part of our originating starting item actually disappear at some point. Later on, I don't have any epsilon, or, well, sometimes it reappears over here, but that's how manipulations on the look-ahead side are actually performed. Okay, so let's get back to the other view. Good. In this fashion, I can continue the whole construction, and you see that there's a lot of things to do here to fill in, and other than before, I have a third page of just things. This is quite tedious to do by hand, but you can find ways to automate that. That's what typical LR1 parser generators actually do when they compute their automata. And the outcoming LR1 automaton is, well, that's what you see is the LR0 automaton. That's the addition that comes into our automaton when we do the whole LR1 construction. So you see it adds quite a lot of detail to the old automaton. However, if you look closely into the details of the states of these LR1 automaton, or of this LR1 automaton now, we had a few states which were ambiguous before. We had states where we had situations like these, but we didn't have these look-ahead sets attached to them. So before, these were states that were ambiguous because it was there was a completed item and a non-completed item, and we couldn't keep them apart from each other. Now we have a criterion to check whether the first or the second item is the one that's actually relevant for my situation. And the way how I have to interpret them is the following. I have to consider my input. If my look ahead in my current configuration is actually either, well, run out of input symbols or the plus input symbol, then the completed item is the one that we want to apply. And in the other case, well, there's also a non-completed item, which would indicate for shifting. But when is this the relevant thing? Well, we also have to check for the input and have to check whether the first symbol of this whole part that comes after our marker is actually matching the input. In this case, the relevant symbol is this one, the multiplication operator. So if you see the multiplication operator, we should shift in state Q9. But if we see the end of input or plus, we should reduce to E. More formally, what you have to do is you have to, in such a situation where we would have a shift-reduce conflict in an LR0 automaton, in an LR1 automaton, you will check the look ahead, the admissible look ahead of the completed item against the first of what the marked fraction of the non-completed item is, together with the one composed right context of the non-completed item, and if they intersect, we still would have some kind of conflict. But if they don't, well, we're fine, and we have resolved our conflicts. And as it turns out, all the states that were in conflict for the LR0 automaton are now in our LR1 automaton in for our grammar resolved. We always have disjunct either look-ahead sets or look-ahead sets intersected with the right parts of these non-completed items being disjunct from each other. Okay, so with that we can then do a construction for a whole parsing system. And it's quite similar to the LR0 parser, except that now we have to integrate information about these look-aheads into our system. We can do that by introducing new tables that encode what we should do in case of a certain look-ahead symbol. And for that we have for once the go-to table, that is the one that encodes the transitions in the canonical LR1 automaton, and the action table, which encodes when I found my state of the canonical automaton, and I have to check with the look-ahead in the input whether what I should do in this state. So in practice, that looks, for example, like this. I have an action table where my for each of my action states I will have as outcome an entry in my table under the actual particular look-ahead symbol. What I should do in this state. So if I'm in state Q3 and I see a plus in my input, I should reduce with variant 1 of production T. And for example, to do something different, for state Q9 prime, if I see multiplication in the input, I will do a shift. So that is how I can. I have to do the construction of my automaton, and I have to examine all my finite states for the occurrence of different items, completed or non-completed, and I have to evaluate them for their for differing behavior when I see different contexts, and I have to enter these things in my action table. Apart from that, I encode the go-to transitions of my canonical automaton into the action table of this parser. That's all I need to do. The formal construction is over there, but as the time is already quite advanced, I would say that's something that you can read at home, I think. Yeah, it's only a little bit left of parsing here, which is that you have seen that there's the possibility for reduce conflicts and shift reduce conflicts in LR0. Although LR1 is much more capable than LR0, there's still the possibility for reduce conflicts and shift reduce conflicts. And in these cases, your grammar and productions are not suitable for LR1 parsing. You might once again enlarge your look-ahead window, but that only buys you a certain amount of capabilities. Actually, what it does is it also increases the state space of your automaton construction by quite a bit. If you imagine that only adding a lookahead window of one almost doubled our state space, this will go on in an exponential manner, and thus LRK is something which is probably not so suited for practical implementations. Even LR1 is something that is considered to be quite costly in most cases. So there are special cases of parsers out there. There are subclasses of LR1 parsers which do not, which try to reduce the amount of states that can be or that are treated by joining their look-ahead sets with other items from other states, or even do a global look-ahead set for one state, and so on. So there's a lot of special classes out there, which are for the most mostly used ones are simple LRK, SLRK, is that, or LALRK. And I think in the tutorial, you will use one of these LALRK parsers for constructing one of a parser for a grammar. So this is all for parsing. What you should probably find interesting is that, looking back at what LLK parsing was capable of, you had a clear hierarchy between the different LL parsing approaches. If you increase your look-ahead window in your LL parser, you will be able to actually parse more languages than with smaller look-ahead windows. However, for LR parsing, that's not the case. With LR1, you can find always find a parser that parses the same content as for any other LRK parser. However, you might have to transform the grammar a little bit. But LR1 is already capable of parsing all the deterministic languages. Deterministic context-free languages that are out there. A subset of that is LALRK, SLRK, and LR0. Those two intersect with LL1 and up to LLK at some point, but there's also languages that are not LALRK or SLRK, but in LL1, for example. However, LR1 is the one that will parse them all. There's also regular languages, which is a pretty small set, which is in the intersection of all of the above. Okay, that's what I said already. What you should take away from this first part of the lecture is that we had a lot of similar concepts for the first two phases. There was the concept of generating our software components for scanner and parser. For scanner, you should take away that there's the Perisethi or Grushkov construction for making a regular expression into a non-deterministic automaton. Then there's ways to do the power set construction for to create finite automata. However, there's this idea of not performing the construction totally, but just by need to get smaller automata. Then there's syntactical analysis. For syntactical analysis, we had certain ways to perform first and follow computations. So look-ahead sets were a large topic. There's ways to compute that in a quite fast manner. Then there's ways to set up different parsing approaches, top-down or bottom-up. For top-down, you would have LL parsing, and we had LL1 parsing in particular, where we would refer to follow-one sets in order to resolve the conflicts that are happening in the item pushdown automaton. Then there's bottom-up syntax analysis, where there's the concept of the shift-reduce parser, which is extended by the characteristic or canonical automaton. You have that in different flavors, depending on whether you use look-ahead or not. And from with these canonical automata, you can then extend the shift-reduce parser to something which is actually deterministic, which is the LR1 parser. And that's all. So next time we will continue with semantic analysis. I thank you for your attention and hope you do have a nice week.